Hey, welcome back. Welcome back to yet another episode of the Terry Summers Podcast. This is actually episode 15. I think that's super cool. And I know that when you come to the Terry Summers Podcast, you get an array of things from the buffet to choose from. Today, you're going to get a bare-necked lady. Oh my goodness. Bare-necked lady. I don't really know where that came from, but it basically is going to sum this episode up pretty sure. I don't really know where I'm going completely with this episode, so why don't you get your seatbelt on and buckle up and come along with me? I know where my heart wants to go, but I didn't really want to think about it too much. I wanted just to speak from my heart. But before I do that, let's go on a little trip. I want you to close your eyes, particularly if you live here in Arizona. I want you to close your eyes, get kind of quiet, and I want you to imagine that it's chilly outside and that the wind is blowing lightly and it's tossing around the leaves and they're just skipping down the street. And when you step back inside, there's a little fireplace crackling and the smells of cinnamon and apple are filling the air, and you get yourself a little cup of hot apple cider, and you sit down with a good book, and there's some music playing, and something baking in the oven, and it's fall, and you're just so warm and cozy. Do you not want to wake up? I take myself there to that place daily. I lie to myself daily. I love the fall. I should probably say the idea of fall. I try to drum up as much of that as I possibly can. Being raised in Southern California, which, you know, is a sunny state, though we had, at least in my memory, I think it's changed now, but we had, you know, some fluctuation between summer and fall. But boy, do I long and dream and daydream about the fall. I mean, I have so many pumpkin spice candles burning in my house right now that my eyes burn. And I lie to myself. I lie to myself big time. I'm going to decorate for the fall here shortly. I just have not been able to make myself because it is so hot outside, but I'm going to go ahead and dive into the illusion that there's something that resembles fall here probably this next week. As a matter of fact, I purchased some corn stalks. Like, what a business to be in, okay? So you grow corn, you sell that for, you know, whatever, and then you have these stalks left. And then you make probably a greater heaping financially from selling those corn stalks to dreamers like me in Arizona, where it's, 110 in the fall. And we will go to great lengths to pretend that we live in a state that makes you feel all those warm and cozy and fuzzy things. So I'm going to be putting those babies up this week somewhere outside. Message me if you want my address and you can drive by. I think I shared with you in an episode previous that last year I saw the cutest. Yeah, I do crafts. I do. I'm not uber into it. I don't like to be told what to do. Oh, I crack myself up. But I get ideas. And then I take on my own variation of something, or I see someone's. But anyway, so I made this really funky but cool garland out of paper bags that, you know, leaves, crumbled up the paper bag, and then cut different shapes of leaves, and then I put them on rope. And anyway, I digress. But I am going to fall this place up. You hear me? And I'm all about lying to myself. So I don't know where you stand on all of that, listeners. If you're in a state that has seasons other than hell, gosh, why don't you message me and tell me what that's like? Help me out. Help me out. Take me on a journey. And take a picture, maybe. Email the Terry Summers podcast. You can go to terrysummers.com/podcast and communicate with me there. I would absolutely love it. Or even on, you know, Instagram. Go ahead and do that too. I would like to hear from you. I want pictures and I want descriptions of what it smells like and what it feels like. Someday, I really believe that I will be living in a place, at least seasonally, perhaps, who knows, that has a change in the weather. Gosh, it's on the top of my list. I just, I really, really, really want to have that. How about you? Are you sun lovers and worshipers and love the fact that Arizona doesn't change? There's so many people out there that are like that. And I don't know who you are. I don't understand you. No, I mean, to each their own. But, you know, I just am craving a little bit of that. So I take myself on journeys and I burn candles and I boil my own homemade simmer on the stove that has cloves and cinnamon and star anise and a few other things. So I just needed to get that off my chest. Thanks for writing that out with me. Do you remember an episode or so back that I confessed, I told, tattled on myself about my food addiction, and I said that I read a book several years ago that like took my breath away in several places. Pretty much the whole book did. I don't jive with the whole book. And that's something that, you know, maybe we could talk about later. I'm not going to go into that today, but I am going to read some of the places that particularly pertain to sort of my thoughts today that gripped me all those years back and still do today. As I was flipping through the pages and sort of marking what I wanted to read today, I was like, whoa, I need to read this book again. It's just truth, and it's a nakedness, thus my title, Bare Naked Lady. It kind of gives me chills to contemplate the fact that I could be physically and literally standing in front of you, bare and naked. But as a metaphor goes, the reality of this is that I couldn't really be any more naked than what I'm probably going to talk about today. Not probably, I am. The reality is that I have escaped so many things. I don't really want to get into a lot of the emotional stuff because I think that will come later. But I know that I've struggled with fear since I was little. I think I might have my kindergarten teacher on as one of my guests. Can you believe I'm hanging and visiting and have her as a friend? It is the coolest thing ever, particularly since kindergarten was one of those times in my memory that I just were painful because I was so riddled with fear. But and I don't think she, well, maybe, you know, I'm wondering if she did know it. We haven't really gotten into that, but I've just struggled with fear my whole little sweet life. And I laugh, but not in a ha-ha, in a kind of way. And when I look back, particularly from the promptings in this book, I just see a system that I created. And I didn't really know, I knew behaviorally, hindsight, seeing that. I mean, I knew that, you know, when I got home from school, my grandmother didn't live far. I think I shared that with you, that there was a big piece of huge, you know, significant piece of property that I grew up on in Southern California, and family owned certain portions of it. And so, you know, I grew up with my grandmother literally a stone's throw away from my front door. And coming home from school and getting to hang out with Grandma, Southern from Oklahoma, I could smell. Often she picked me up, but even when I was walking home some days from school, I could smell the beans, like pinto beans and cornbread in cooking. And just the smell of it sent off a reaction in me that my little legs hustled. Those were days when they did that. But they hustled to get me there. And it was just this, first of all, it delicious. I love beans and cornbread, particularly when my grandmother made them. I mean, they are the bomb. And, you know, there's certain condiments and things that go with it. And I won't bore you with all of that. That's another episode, I promise. But they would chill my little soul out. And I knew they did it in my mind because I loved it. And it was emotional in my grandma. But when I picked this book up, to read it, you know, gosh, it might be 15 years ago, I think, is she 14? It broke down the chemical part that was going on in me back then that I didn't know. And I think that's one of the reasons that it made me cry, because I shared with you, right, that it made me cry. Did I say that an episode or so ago? If you didn't listen to that episode, but I bawled like a baby when I randomly opened up this book that was sitting on my mom's table. And I was like, what's this? Because the title of it is so alluring for a chubby chick. It says The Anatomy of a Food Addiction. Like anyone just wants to flip through that book. But I was pulled to open up that book. And when I started reading, it gripped me so much. It was like ding, 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 ding. And they're one of those things that I read had to do with the chemical reaction going on in, for sure, my body, but in a body of someone who is addicted or likely addicted to food. And she even says, she being the author, that it's not your fault. Ugh, I even get a little choked up saying that now, because I have, bare naked lady, I have carried such shame over my size, over what I've done to my body. It tattles on me. But that's not the worst of it. The worst of it is what I've just done to my person and all that I could be, want to be, maybe dared to dream to be. You know, even dreaming about myself and hopes. I know that I would listen to people growing up talking about what they dreamed of and ambitions and goals, even using the word excited. And I understood all of that. I just didn't connect with it. And there wasn't any of that there in me that sounds so weird to say out loud, but there wasn't. And I now know that I was replacing. I was like, there was a rewiring, a recircuiting, a numbing, a shutting things off, a closing the doors to the other rooms in the house that was taking place both behaviorally, as I mentioned, the thrill of eating and enjoying that process habitually over and over again, and the triggers of the smells and all that stuff that would happen, but then also chemically, really understanding that likely I had a predisposition. I was predisposed. Yeah. To being an addict based on my chemical makeup. So, let me read a little bit of that to you. A few little excerpts here so that I can kind of set the stage for what it is that, you know, I've been thinking, and particularly over the past couple weeks or so. Anyway, it's in order reading the book, but I'm skipping a lot. But this just clarifies in loose terms. Now, mind you, these are not all my opinions. This is from the book, The Anatomy of a Food Addiction, The Brain Chemistry of Overeating, by Anne Catherine, M-A. I don't want to leave any of her accolades off. Here it goes. An addiction is dependence on a substance or activity to the extent that normal, healthy functioning is impaired. I completely get that. And mine was so obvious, and I don't think it might necessarily be to everyone. Someone might say, and I'm not trying to talk you into that you're a food addict, but someone might say, to the extent that normal healthy functioning is impaired. Well, mine's not impaired. My normal healthy functioning's not impaired. But I think if we food addicts look at ourselves and even break down what that might be, you know, like what that impairment might look like. It's not a standard thing for everyone. For instance, I mean, let's just say that someone eats a lot of carbohydrates and sugars and things like that, and is worn out. The insulin sensitivity in their body and type 2 diabetes has crept in. And that has, in my opinion, that would be, I think so, would qualify to the extent that normal, healthy functioning is impaired. Something functioning in the body is impaired. But I think that this statement, you know, is pretty broad, and a lot of things can fit underneath that. But I'll stop commenting on what my thoughts are on that till I finish reading the book. Here's another one. A person uses a substance that other people may use without having problems because the substance replaces or causes an effect that the body normally should provide. It feels very good. The person uses the substance again to repeat the good feeling. Over time, the body makes a physical adjustment as a result of the use of the substance. Then the body needs the substance for two reasons: to promote the original effect sought by using the substance, and to prevent pain in the areas that have been altered. Now, there's lots of explanation in between that. Again, I'm just grabbing some things that I think sum up what it is that I've been processing just recently. Here we go. Chemicals are released from one leg into the gap. One leg of a nerve is what she was referring to. And this chemical is what stimulates the next nerve to pass on the message. We do have a variety of chemicals that cause varying reactions. Two types of brain chemicals are involved in food addiction: serotonin and endorphin. Both chemicals are released from the ends of nerves. When released, they fill the gap between nerves and stimulate the following nerve, which happens when the next nerve is stimulated. What happens when the next nerve is stimulated depends on where in the brain it's located. So, this is a very technical part of the book, but it was triggering me to really contemplate that I had stuff going on in me that wasn't just, gosh, give me a Big Mac because I can't control myself. It was literally a chemical reaction, has been, that has been involved in at least a good portion of my food addiction. Serotonin, hear this, and I know you know it, probably have heard it, but just serotonin promotes relaxation, peacefulness, relief from pain, and a decrease in anxiety. Remember I said I was fearful? Endorphin gives relief from pain and a sensation of pleasure. Both serotonin and endorphin releasing nerves are highly concentrated in the part of the brain that regulates eating, sleeping, aggression, drinking, and sex. It's possible that people susceptible to alcohol and food addiction have a malfunction in their serotonin functioning. And she goes on to show research and stuff to that. Perhaps an insufficient amount is manufactured or it's not released readily enough. A person with insufficient serotonin is likely to feel stress and pain more acutely than someone with a normal amount. I will just take a note that I think I've also shared with my audience that you know that I am Native American. And if we look at the fact, you know, that we come from lineage, my lineage, I know for a fact, has challenges with addiction, alcohol in particular. So it is quite likely, it might not take science to actually explain it to me, that there is a chemical makeup, a malfunction in my lineage with the production and a distribution of serotonin in my body. So having been what I would guess would be a predisposition to become addicted. Then it addresses serotonin a little bit more. So if your serotonin level is functioning poorly and your life becomes stressful, you can get some relief from that stress by eating sugar. She later equates that it isn't just sugar, but she equates sugar to carbohydrate, to basically a spike, you know, in insulin. We all learn pain relief very quickly. When something stops pain, we repeat it. If sugar stops pain for you, you're going to eat it again and again and again. You may well have developed a dependence on food through such a process. Without realizing it, you were compensating for a brain malfunction by eating. Food was used as a self-medication. Will you stop eating? If serotonin reaches certain concentrations, it's supposed to tell you to stop eating. It's suspected that some people have a malfunction in this feedback loop. So these folks can eat a whole loaf of bread without triggering the stop eating message. I will pause for just a second. This isn't funny, but I mean, hindsight, I think maybe. I'm going to call out my girlfriend. I won't say her last name, but my girlfriend Kelly. When we would walk home, you know, from school together, and this long piece of property that we were on, at the end of my long piece of property connected to the very end of hers on the other block over on the other side. And so her dad put a gate in the fencing that divided the properties. And so she would come through my property and back in our backfield, and then go on home from hers, but with a stopover at my house, and particularly the kitchen, and particularly a loaf of bread that we would attack with vigor and make toast. We just have to text each other the word toast, and we so know what that means. We would go through a whole loaf of bread. My little brother might have gotten a piece in there somewhere, he had no clue that we were devouring like four pieces to his one. But I know that I just felt really embarrassed when my mom asked me, where did the loaf of bread go? Kelly and I ate it? I think we nearly torched the kitchen with the heat from the toaster. And butter. Yeah. Anyway. So I get that. Also, this thing, you know, it explained to me. I have been puzzled going out to dinner with, you know, friends, male or female, and at the end of the time at a restaurant or something, they have food left on their plate. You know, a little bit of this. Like, maybe it's not a lot. Like, it's not enough necessarily to maybe say, whoa, I need a box. I'm not that familiar with asking that to any waiter, I need a box. I am more in these recent years, but I didn't understand the concept of asking for a leftover box. Leftover, what's leftover? But I would look at the plate of the person I was with and stare at the food and hope they weren't noticing that my eye line was not connecting with theirs. I was looking at the last piece of potato or a little bite of something, two or three pieces. And why were they just not finishing it? You can't just put that in your mouth and finish it. Why would you leave that there? Well, maybe because they were full. I didn't understand that. I still struggle with that. Like, I would put it in my mouth no matter. And it is because there isn't really a stop button until I am so uncomfortable that I can't move. And I know there are those out there that understand what I'm saying, and then they get rid of their food by going to the bathroom and eliminating it through vomiting. And I've never done that, but there is definitely truth into what she just said, and I was just really connecting with it. Let's move on just a little bit to endorphins. Endorphins are in a different chemical class from serotonins. Endorphins make us feel good. Well, hey, who's not going to sign up for that? Particularly when you're a little kid who's afraid. I want to feel good. For some people, eating sweets, starches, hello, and or fats, causes the release of endorphins. Thus, for these people, bare naked lady, eating certain foods relieves discomfort and feels good. Hello. Come on, tell me more. Certain endorphins also stimulate eating. Well, get out of town. No way, Jose. If you eat sugar and beta endorphin is released, you'll want to eat more sugar. Go figure. That second helping of sugar will release more beta endorphin and stimulate more eating. A snowball effect. I'm being a little sarcastic, but I tell you what, this grabbed me by the shoulders and my chin and made me look at myself and say, hey, this is real. This is real. And it was a relief in many ways. People susceptible to this process can eat enormous quantities of food. I've also been embarrassed about that. I've not been, you know, a little petite eater. I'm even thinking about, so I went through a period, as I shared with you, after losing my first husband, where I really, it's when I began the process of evaluating and dealing with the fact I had to say that I'm a food addict, and there's just a history here. But I went through a process of healing and taking a look at that and addressing things and facing a lot of stuff. And a lot of stuff was addressed. And I think since healing was the objective, a lot of healing was achieved. But even still, and I lost a lot of weight. I lost 170 pounds during that time. But I also knew that there was still that thing, that root. I had addressed everything up to that point to above ground. The nasty weed, I took it down and I addressed it, but the root was still there because I, and I, forgive me if I've shared this with you, but I would go to lunch with a friend and she ordered a regular salad and I needed the large. Not so much that it was about being hungry for the large, but it had to do with needing to fill the space that I need, that I needed the enormousness of the salad, even though it was a healthy option and veggies and what have you. A symptom of this problem is having difficulty stopping eating once you've started. And that's so true. That I hope I can remember to address when we get beyond this. That's some of what I have been in the middle of these past couple of weeks. Anyway, there's a lot more to this book, but the last little thing I want to share was kind of a checklist just on our feelings as food addicts, and just, well, you'll get it once I say it all. Food addicts use food to alter feelings, make up for deprivation, distract themselves from problems, take the place of a friend, avoid doing things they don't want to do, feel better, stop feeling, put themselves to sleep, help them forget they don't know how to get something they want. That one made me sick to my stomach. The book is crazy, y'all. Like I said, I don't subscribe to everything in it, but I needed that information and I still need it to remind myself that there's stuff going on in me that is not my doing. Then, this is, of course, married to behavioral things, the chemical, and then the behavioral and situations and that I have learned how to cope and what have you. And the two of them coming together is just a powerful marriage, and an addiction is formed. So I'm tired of it. In this book, there is a place where she, at the end of every chapter, she asks you to do an exercise. And one of the exercises that was initially asked early on in the book was to chart, list, basically is more accurate, the things that I have lost as a result of my addiction that I could have had and didn't get or missed out on or experienced in a painful way that then created a loss that followed. And that was an overwhelming, honest process for me to go through. And that was, like I said, about 13, 14 years ago that I actually did that. And it was so, 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 so sobering. I wrote a book that includes a lot of that. By the way, I am going to have on a reader that has reached out to me that purchased the book and just affirmed the connection that it made with her. And it's a book that I'm sure, because I'm a female, that other females will connect with, I think, on some level. But I think it's really, it doesn't have a gender preference as far as the reader. I think that it's called If These Stretch Marks Could Talk. So I hope that you get a chance to go get it. It's on Amazon, and that also is in the Terry Summers podcast. No, excuse me, terrysummers.com/podcast. You can go there if you needed a direct link, or if you are familiar with how you get on Amazon and get a book that way. Sorry, my dog is barking in the other room, but I will have her on. But in this book, it explains some of that process that I went through where I just had to say, where did I go? And the numbing out. So food has taken the place of so much, but come on, it's food. And it's good. It is. My grandma's beans and cornbread. Gosh, you know what? I need to cook a Southern meal and have some of you over. Because there's nothing like a Southern meal where beans and cornbread are the center feature. And there's nothing wrong with that. There is not anything at all wrong with loving food. It's a gift from God. It is provision. It's nutrition. Uh-huh. You know, sometimes I get a little agitated with people say, you know, the whole eat to live and live to eat. Well, I have lived to eat, but eating to live, yeah, I get it. It is true. We need food to live. But if we just keep it right there, I think that's kind of bleached out, washed out. There is so much to love about food. I know this will tell you a lot about me, bare necked lady. I was in traffic one time. In Southern California, when are you not in traffic? And it was bumper to bumper, and I had had some fruit with me on the front seat of my car, and so like literally sitting there, not moving at all. And there were strawberries, and I took a bite of the strawberry, and as I looked at the strawberry, I just got so emotional over the strawberry, because the little seeds on the strawberry are just placed perfectly apart from one another. I mean, the beauty of food overwhelmed me. I started crying over a strawberry, opening it up and seeing all the lines inside, and even that a banana splits in three parts. And I get mowed over that. I think that, but that's, you know, maybe partly me, I'm super sensitive, but there's just beauty in food, and I don't want to ever feel that I can't enjoy it. But I'm still agitated that I have traded so much in my life for what food provided and still does. So I'm not real sure how to launch into this part. This is where I've been the past 2 weeks. It's a long process that I got here, but probably 2 years ago, almost three, I had been reading about the power of fasting, and Dr. Fung, F-U-N-G, you can Google him, and intermittent fasting, and you're going to get tons of information. But in it for health and what have you, I was just intrigued by all that I was learning, and the science behind it, and just the concept that, though some may disagree, the concept that, you know, our bodies are designed to feast and famine, to take a break. This idea that three meals a day is critical is not necessarily so, was something that I was entertaining, and have had some success in using the fasting for weight loss. But the more I studied the fasting, the more it led me to spiritual practices of fasting, and how fasting has been used to set aside our own wills and our own desires, to leave room for other things, And in my case in particular, because of my faith and my what I would completely call a relationship that I have with God, and specifically Jesus, that I was curious to pursue that more. I'd always heard about it growing up in a churched environment, prayer and fasting, knowing that Jesus fasted for 40 days and other biblical figures used fasting, hearing a lot about the Daniel fast, Daniel being a individual in the Bible that it is spoken of that pursued fasting for powerful breakthroughs. So, and my husband and I both really spent a lot of time thinking about fasting, and it's shifted from fasting for health benefits to fasting for breakthroughs in conjunction with prayer and understanding. Well, not really understanding, because I don't completely understand it. I think it's a supernatural issue, but there's just been a long-standing truth and history that fasting is partnering with God in a way that is very unique. And I know that when Jesus spoke to his disciples, he said, when you fast. He didn't say if you fast. When you fast. So there was an understanding that it should be considered as part of your life, that a time of giving up what is such a natural craving and even a physical need to a certain extent after, you know, a certain point. We can't just go forever without eating and starvation would happen. But to giving that up, that there is a powerful process that's taking place. And we really, really researched and spent a lot of time watching YouTube videos and hearing experts share, listening to others' testimonials on the process. And I'll just, you know, refer to myself because I don't want to speak for Jonathan, but we both decided to, it took us a long time to get there because we knew we wanted to do an extended fast. And a lot of the lengths of time that people talk about in choosing and consecrating a period of time for a fast, and we're talking a water fast. We're not talking a juice fast or a cleanse or what have you, though those are great too. But we just, it was a water only situation. That we were contemplating, you know, whether it's 7 days, 10 days, 14 days. I know a Daniel fast, I believe it was 14 days that Daniel fasted, 21 days, 40 days. I think you don't really want to go beyond 40 days. I think that the research says, and I think it's kind of interesting that our bodies are designed that we can pretty much go without food for 40 days. And then after that, it's like, mm-mm. And I know the 40-day concept is mentioned multiple times in the Bible. So I think it correlates that God knew what he was doing, that we can handle that kind of restriction for that long without food. Anyway, I digress. I just came off of a 14-day fast. Well, it was actually 15 and a half days, but I knew that I wanted to do a 14-day. My husband and I actually wanted to do a 21-day. We monitored our blood sugar and our blood pressure, and at the end of a 15-day, 15 and a half, 15, 6 hours, to be exact, because you are counting every minute. No, not really. Not by then. I was over it. But we did break our fast. And I have to tell you, it was cray cray. I did not eat anything for 15 days and 6 hours. Actually, it was more than that. 15 days and 14 hours. And it showed me so much. First of all, once I got through a rough part, and I will talk about that, I never felt better. My body was tapping into my fat, tap, tap. And I think it's such a pure energy that I just felt great. And I was full of energy. There were occasions where moments where things would take a dip. I also stayed up on electrolytes. That's sort of something that you have to watch. And I'm not suggesting this, by the way. Y'all go do your own research if you're interested in fasting. I think it is absolutely something that I would encourage you to check out. For spiritual reasons, first and foremost, though I know that my body benefited. Some of the highs of it, of the experience, was just really an understanding of my body. Is, I think we are miraculous as human beings and the body that we have. And it wanted to take care of some things. And I could tell it was just going to town. Like you hired a cleaning team to come in when your house had been jacked up for a long time, and those little busy cleaners just hit corners you never thought you ever dusted, and I could tell it was going on in my body. The first 3 days or so, I was angry, upset, anxious, depressed. I almost thought, you know, I don't know how I'm going to do this. At the end of day one, I was just overwhelmed with a thought, and I just heard in my heart and in my spirit, I knew that was God talking to me, one day at a time. Take it one day at a time. So that huge lesson, as just a reminder, I had to take it one day at a time. There was no part of me that could go and look out at day 21 or day 14. There was not a single part of me that could focus on that. It made me so anxious. But isn't that true about life, period? We look out and try and figure out what's out there, and it weighs us down. The only thing we really have right now, not to sound like a motivational speaker, but the only thing that we have right now is right now. And it put me in such a place of being right here with myself and right here with God. I know my own spiritual practices and faith may not be yours, and I'm just sharing from my spot. But a peace came over me that, as the Bible coins a phrase, past all understanding. It was not of me. And I want to go back, and I'm going to continue practicing fasting in a regular way. And yes, it would look like intermittent fasting in some cases, but because I see the benefits as being above and beyond the physical, it is just going to be part of my life. I also wanted just to break that mojo of telling my body, you're not going to get food. I know you're addicted to it. You're addicted to the cycle. And just like stopping everything, pulling myself off the track and letting the addiction freak out and suffer. And it did. It did, my friends. It freaked out. I had mourning feelings, deep grief, sad that I was putting away my addiction for however long, and hopefully I was breaking some of the grip that it had on me. I know that the chemical thing is still there, but I was even hoping that in the process, and who knows, I don't know, because God is big and can do wonderful things, and he's still in the miracle making business. So in my time of fasting and praying, you bet I have been asking for things to just be broken, to be broken off me is what I mean. And actually to be restored is what I should say. For those things that are broken to be restored, to be renewed. And I am so excited about that process and what came of it. I had a horrible taste in my mouth. I know that if you do some reading about intermittent fasting, they talk about keto breath, that when you move into ketosis, which is the state, it's not ketoacidosis. I think that's like the dangerous one. I'm not a doctor. Look it up. But ketosis is the state in which your body has entered in when you are using fat for fuel, that you've depleted your glucose storage, that carbohydrates, nothing is feeding that storage any longer. It's been depleted and you dip into your fat. And so maybe because that fat's been there, maybe fat stores toxins. So I'm guessing, I haven't really broken down why you get that breath, but the breath is nasty. And I don't really smell it as much as maybe you would having a conversation with me. Perhaps that's why I haven't had a conversation with anyone up close and personal in 2 weeks. But I know that the taste in my mouth, I couldn't get away from. And I just had to, you know, they don't really want you chewing gum and what have you that stimulates, you know, the juices in your stomach and, you know, trying to live out as comfortably as you can. There were sort of some flu-like symptoms as my body initially went, wait, she's not feeding me, and stuff was coming out. I don't think my husband will mind me sharing that he had a rash come out that is, you know, now kind of subsided, but it's just the way for the body to cleanse, and it's getting rid of stuff. I know that it goes and it cleans out the liver, and just amazing process, our body. It wants to heal itself, and having a break from food really is a way to allow it to heal itself. On a spiritual level, having a break from food has allowed some things to come to the surface that I know that a healing's happening there too. And I believe so much in the power of prayer, but I couldn't explain it to you, and I still haven't found a good explanation. I don't think anyone has it, but I just sort of knew that partnering with God by stepping away from something that I love so much, whether I have an addiction to it or not, to let go of that, to say, I want you, God. I want you. And I want your presence in my life. I want your peace. I want you to step in where fears grip me. I just know something supernatural happened in the course of the 2 weeks. There may be some of you out there, and I recognize this, and it is so okay, and I love you anyway, and I hope you still love me, that thinks she is a Fruit Loop, man. She is subscribing to a fairy tale. And I understand why you might think that. I do. I can step back, and I do step back and wonder. But this is faith. This is faith that I think the definition of faith is the evidence of things hoped for and the something of things not seen. I don't really know how the definition goes, but this is hoped for and things I can't see. Stuff that's going on that is a combination of those. And I feel changed. I did lose weight. I will not joke. That's a side benefit. A good chunk of it is water. Obviously, you're letting go of a lot of carbohydrates help you your body hang on to water. So when you're eliminating them and all foods, of course, it's going to let go of that. The insulin process of insulin going up when you eat, depending on what you eat, it goes way up. It's a fat storing hormone. So by stopping the rise and fall of insulin, you're not contributing to the storage of fat. So there's a release, and then just the toxin release. So if fat stores toxins and you're cleansing your body of toxins, there's no job for fat anymore. You know, it really is a protector. It's been a friend. I'm not angry at it like I used to be. But I lost 20, just a hair, like probably a couple ounces, under 21 pounds in those 15 days and 13 hours. So, and then as soon as you eat, you know, of course, a little bit of that comes back on, 5 or 6 pounds or so, but it it'll even out. I just share this with you because it was such a huge event. I've never done that before. I have fasted, you know, a handful of days and some extended days, but I've never done that. And it is a trip, and you can survive, and it isn't dangerous. If you are nursing, or if you are underweight, if you are a child, no, don't try going any length of time. But I have basically a cafeteria attached to me for my body to dine on, and there's plenty there. And keeping an eye on blood sugar and blood pressure, and making sure the electrolytes, that you don't lose electrolytes, you know, and that could be dangerous. So there was always salt and electrolyte supplements going on. So I want to talk more about it, and I will share more about it. But I am in a spot where I am dealing with my addiction, to say the least. And I want to be at a healthy weight. For health, first of all, there's been so many things that I have been restricted in because of it. I can't even tell you. I mean, the weight loss of 170 pounds a handful of years back was significant. I couldn't believe what I had been missing. And I had not yet quite reached my goal weight or a healthy weight. I was definitely in, you know, earshot of it, but going through a turnstile without, you know, having it give me an appendectomy, or buckling a seatbelt without fear, riding in a plane, in a seat on a plane. I did share with you that my addiction reared its ugly head, and all those things that I knew to do, I did again and put back on. 70-ish-y, somewhere in there, give or take, of those 170 pounds. And I started having challenges again, just like I did before, and restrictions. I was just at my cousin's house, and they have a 2-story home, and my bedroom was upstairs. And I'm like, what the heck have I done? You know, there were days after losing the 170 pounds, I could bound upstairs, and I can't right now. So I definitely want to restore a healthy weight, and I'm in that place, and I want to share that with you in a bare naked kind of way. And that's what this episode really, I hope to be. Like I said, I spoke from my heart and from my gut and my spirit, and just I hope it made sense. I'm going to share more in future episodes and keep you in on the loop. If you would like to go back and look at some of my journey, if you go to my website, or if you Google Terry Takes It All Off, there is a series of 8 episodes on Terry.tv that I don't think it's dot. I think it's Terry TV that you can watch. And that was in the process of the initial weight loss. And I'm going to pick that series up here as I pick up my efforts to restore my body fully. So that's all from this bare naked lady. And thank you for listening, and thank you for writing out this podcast with me. And I love sharing myself with you, and I love sharing my friends with you, and I love sharing information with you. I hope that you will subscribe to the Terry Summers podcast and share it and comment and rate. All those things are super helpful to a podcast. I wish I didn't even have to say that, but I want to say that because I want the podcast to be successful. It's not really where my mind stays though, most of the time, if you want to know for sure, but I will definitely ask you to do that. And I hope that you do. And again, go and leave questions for me at terrysummers.com podcast/podcast. And also go pick up my book. I think you'd really enjoy it. I think it's got some humor in it, and there's a definite story there. And each one of the chapters may not resonate with you exactly, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was something in there that made a connection for you, food addiction or not, just about life. And that book is called If These Stretch Marks Could Talk. It's on Amazon, and it's $9.99, I think. So this is the conclusion of The Bare Naked Lady, and I'll expose myself to you again soon. Have a great day, y'all.